Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Science and religion, they're often viewed as diametrically opposed. But when it comes to climate change, there's a growing realization that there's a lot of overlap, even synergy, between what scientists tell us we need to do to slow climate change and what faith leaders say we should be doing to care for one another and our planet. Last May, more than 100 scientists and 500 religious leaders from Massachusetts signed a joint appeal for climate action and launched a coalition to formalize those common interests and goals. Reverend Mariama White Hammond was one of the architects of that partnership. She's pastor of the New Roots AME Church in Boston and a fellow with the Green Justice Coalition. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, what role does ecological justice, that's a phrase I've heard you use, and it's a little bit different than climate justice, potentially, a little bit broader. Mm-hmm. What role does that play in your work as a pastor?
Yeah, so one of the reasons I use the phrase ecological justice is because the study of ecology is the study of relationships, the relationships between things that are in space together. And climate obviously is an important part of that, but part of my concern is that as we look at some of these scientific things, and I pay a lot of attention to what science is telling us, science is merely pointing to a problem in our relationships, a problem in the way that we regard the other parts of this ecosystem, the other living beings and non-living beings on who our lives depend. And so if we only look at the question of what is going wrong, We don't look fully at how should things be? How could we be in right relationship? And that's a phrase, right relationship, that I grew up hearing a lot in church. The idea that there's a way to be in a loving and just relationships with each other. And not just with other human beings. I think that's very important. We need to get that right. But what would it look like for me to recognize what science already tells me to be true, which is that there's tiny pieces of phytoplankton in the ocean that are making oxygen, and that oxygen makes it possible for me to live. What if I lived my life acknowledging that relationship and honoring that relationship? I think if we did that, we wouldn't have climate change as an issue.
What you're saying there about, you know, things like phytoplankton or science pointing out problems in relationships, obviously you've found a way to incorporate what you're getting from science in terms of knowledge with your religious beliefs and as you said, your upbringing. But I wonder if you ever mm-hmm. find difficulty in reconciling science and your faith. I mean, that's something we hear a lot about, that, you know, the scientific account of the evolution of the planet and of life doesn't exactly match the biblical account of the origin of our world as it is now. Is that ever difficult for you?
You know, I do know that that's a challenge for folks. For me, at this point in my life, no. I think that there was a time where, you know, that was a real struggle. I said, you know, how do I look at this story and that story? And they just seem diametrically opposed. For me, it's really actually been a faith journey of really understanding that there are certain things that I feel like I know about God. I know that God is committed to love. And then there's a whole bunch of things that are part of the mystery of who God is. And so when I learn about science, I think of that as helping to reveal part of the mystery of who God is. And I also believe that there are limits to what we are able to know and understand. For me, you know, I spend a lot of energy being grateful for, appreciating, and really relishing the beauty of God's creation, which I believe that science helps us to know and understand in a more powerful way.
Reverend Mariama White Hammond, this partnership that came into being last year between, one of the original partners, Woods Hole Research Center, a leading climate change mm-hmm. research and policy organization, and then multiple Massachusetts-based religious organizations. You know, obviously, scientists can bring perhaps greater depth of knowledge about the climate change challenge to religious leaders interested mm-hmm. in bringing that into their ministry. I wonder what you see yourself and fellow religious leaders bringing to that partnership and what you hope will come of that in terms of concrete actions.
Right. Well, I think that science, like you said, helps us to diagnose what the problem is. The reality is, though, scientists have been diagnosing for quite a while and it has not necessarily moved us to action. And so, what I think we as faith leaders really bring to the picture is the question of how do we help people to look at this crisis, see it in the context of the broader story of who we are as humans and the reality of this planet and creation, and then, most importantly, begin to take action. Because we don't have a problem about that in terms of lack of technology or understanding of climate change. Yes, of course, it's great that we keep learning about it, we keep understanding it, we keep diagnosing how deep the problem is. But at the end of the day, we have enough information about what's going on to be able to take meaningful action, and yet we are not. And so I think our role as faith leaders is to, of course, spend the time understanding it at a deep level, but to recognize that the deeper crisis is the crisis of inaction, and that's a spiritual crisis, not a scientific issue.
Your work is not just about, let's cut carbon emissions, right? We started off talking about this phrase ecological justice, and we've been talking about the ecological part of it, but the justice part is equally important for you. And you recently gave a talk at Woods Hole Research Center with the title Climate Justice or Climate Just Us. What are the two options you're presenting there with that little turn of phrase?
Right. So I think we live in a world where we, unfortunately, and in a lot of ways, are told that the secret to success is to figuring out how to increase your own personal security, how to insulate yourself, how to make sure that you and your family are okay. But the reality is that climate change is not a problem that can be tackled simply by each individual person. It will affect all of us. And what's most devastating about it is that those of us who have contributed the most to climate issues in terms of the amount of carbon in the atmosphere also tend to have the most financial resource to protect ourselves. And those who have contributed the least often have the least ability to insulate themselves from the effect of climate change. And so for me, this is a justice issue. We have got to make sure that everyone is taken care of. And that means reversing the trends of a lot of our systems that prioritize what we would consider the strong over those who we would consider more weak. It would prioritize those that have the resources, even if they are the ones that are more culpable in this problem. And so my belief is that we cannot fix this issue without having some real conversations about our responsibility in creating this issue, and then our responsibility to one another. I believe that this is the greatest peril and the greatest opportunity of maybe our entire existence as a human species. We got to get it right. And digging in and taking care of me and mine and allowing some lives to matter more than others, if we do that, I actually don't think we deserve to survive. Honestly, all we're trying to do is do what our traditions have been trying to get us to do for millennia. And I believe that's the only way we save ourselves. It's the only way.
A lot of climate and environmental policy more broadly has typically been focused on, this is the end point that we want in terms of carbon emissions or the amount of pollution or what have you. And the justice aspect of that, oh yeah, by the way, we also need to do that in a way that is fair to everybody, has kind of been an add-on or an extra bonus. And it sounds like what you're saying is we need to flip that and worry a lot more about the justice component. And the climate and environmental policy will kind of take care of itself if we do that. Is that what you're saying? And what makes you think that would happen?
So I'm not saying we need to lose track of the long-term goal, but here's the thing. If we were to embrace true justice, which includes justice for our children and grandchildren, we would have to make radically different decisions than what we're making right now. We've got to cut our consumption at levels that for some of us feel unimaginable. What would make you do that other than a deep feeling of love for your great-grandchildren and for your neighbors? I'm not sure that we can get humans to act on the scale and at the depth required unless we are driven by a deep sense of love and vision. If we're just driven by reducing particles that we cannot actually see, I'm just not sure that it actually would even motivate human action at the level that is required. You know, my real lived experience about what it takes for human beings to look beyond themselves and do something that is visionary and bold and courageous. I've just never seen them do it because they read an article and got a mathematical equation and needed to meet that equation. I've never seen humans behave that way. But I have seen parents make sacrifices out of deep love for their children. I've seen communities rally behind each other to save each other. And so I'm saying that motivation, that way of being, has to be at the center of our work. I think the other piece of it is, if you want lots of people, I mean, we don't need just like a small number of elite people to do this. We need billions of people to get on board. If those billions of people do not believe that they are at the center of this decision making, if those billions of people think that they will be disregarded or overlooked as they often have been in the past, what would be their motivation to be engaged?
Well, and we know from science, I guess, from public opinion polls, that in fact, some of the people who are currently the most marginalized, including people of color in the United States, the poorest, are actually the most concerned about climate change. I mean, simply giving them the sense of power, of empowerment, and you know, a more just role in the world could actually shift the priorities that are being addressed by government and at all levels.
Yeah, and nobody knows how to make a dollar out of 15 cents than somebody who's been broke most of their lives. I mean, I think the other reality is that a lot of the solutions we need a lot of low tech, a lot of easily transferable solutions. And I think there's a good chance those come from people who already had to figure out how to make ends meet without a lot of resources, as opposed to people who've always been able to, you know, purchase the things that they need to keep moving on. So there's a lot of reasons that I think we have to put the most marginalized folks at the center.
Reverend Mariama White-Hammond, some of your past work involved using the arts to foster empowerment and activism among disadvantaged youth. It seems there are still some parallels in the way that you are building bridges across disciplines, in this case between science and religion, and still clearly very much an activist.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think it's funny. It's like it's not even like I gave up anything that I was. I just kept adding to it. The core of my work, the core of my calling right now is around ecology and helping people to awaken to our relationship with each other, but also to being a pastor and creating a space for other people to find their voice and find their calling. So, yeah, people say to me like, oh, you've moved in all these different spheres. But the reality is, to me, they didn't feel so disconnected. And if the question is, how do we as human beings come to right relationship with each other? Well, that really spans every part, every sector of our society and every part of my life. So a whole bunch of my work is to help others to sort of ask the question, do they need to be disconnected? Does art and science have to be completely separate from each other? Can engineering and fashion come together? Like, what are the opportunities for things that we imagine to be so separate to begin seeing the connections to each other? And then on top of that, to begin working together in ways, I think, that stretch all of our minds. I say to people all the time, you know, there are three things I think we really need in this moment. We need, oh my goodness, amazing amount of creativity. We've got to reimagine how we live. And that's not going to come easy. We need creativity beyond bounds. But then we also need collaboration, the ability to work together, because if we're going to have a new vision, we also know one of us can make that happen by ourselves. And then we need courage, because we're in for a ride. I mean, there is no question that the jury is still out about whether or not we as a species will get it together and do what we need to do. And so we'll need the courage to follow our heart and be creative and work together to save ourselves. People talk all the time about like saving the planet. This is not about the planet. The planet will survive. She will morph and change. She'll be fine. The question is whether or not we will be able to survive on this planet. And for me, that seems like, you know, one of those like foundational, what are we here for kinds of questions that I can't imagine we would tackle anything else if we haven't figured that piece out. So ultimately, the big question has always been, how do we as a human race wake up to this moment and be the best we absolutely can be? I try to do that personally. I try to help people in my congregation come to that. And I try to engage in the larger world to help other people come to that too.
Reverend Mariama White Hammond is the pastor of New Roots AME Church in Boston and a fellow with the Green Justice Coalition. Thank you so much. It's really been a joy talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. You can always connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.